As a physical object, the baseball is an amazing instrument and plaything. It can be gripped or held in endless ways, and even the slightest calibration can turn an ordinary pitch into a weapon to baffle the most skilled batter. In the right hands, a baseball transforms a major league pitcher to become part boxer and part magician. New York Times national baseball writer Tyler Kepner's new book, K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches, is a deep dive into the stories, stats, folklore, and nostalgia behind America's pastime, told through anecdotes and insights examining the fastball, the curveball, the changeup, the slider, the cutter, the sinker, the splitter, the knuckleball, the screwball, and the spitball. Again, the name of the book is K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Tyler Kepner to the roundtable this morning. Tyler, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what brought you to this idea of telling the story of baseball, a great history of baseball, through 10 pitches?
Well, I've always been fascinated by pitching. I love the way I think it's the most interesting position in sports. You have a pitcher who initiates the action and really gets to decide. He's the great decider. You know, how am I going to – which pitch am I going to throw here and why? And pitchers were great. I mean, they loved talking shop. They loved sort of explaining, how they learned their pitches, how they applied them, and how they passed them down. And the more I did it, it was really fun just to get into kind of the way pitchers sustain their craft by, passing it down like heirlooms.
So it seems to me the obvious question is, how do you get it down to 10?
Well, there are a lot of variations on these kind of pitches, for sure. But I just, the more I talk to people, I kind of settled on just these 10, the slider, the fastball, curveball, knuckleball, splitter/forkball, screwball, sinker, changeup, spitball, and the cutter. So the spitball, also encompasses sort of all those illicit, pitches with scuffs and any kind of illegal pitch goes into that spitball category.
So when it comes to then, once you've identified the pitches, then telling the story of the great practitioners of those particular pitches, is that difficult?
No, that was fun. I mean, I had a long time to do it. I had 3 years to, from beginning to the process till I had to file the whole book. And that gave me time to really dig into, the history, go up to, Cooperstown and do a lot of research up there at their library. And then in my travels as, the national writer for the Times, I was able to just sort of meet up with a lot of great pitchers. Pretty much anybody who threw a pitch particularly well over the last 3 years, I was going to find them. I was going to either find them in the ballpark or get them on the phone or sort of use any connections I have to get in touch with them. And 22 Hall of Fame pitchers, but a lot of pitchers too who weren't, didn't make it to Cooperstown, but threw one pitch really, really well. I think of Elroy Face with his forkball, or a guy like Doug Jones with his changeup there for the Indians. How he was able to close out games, with a really slow pitch. And just so many guys, like all the great knuckleballers, Tim Wakefield and R.A. Dickey and Wilbur Wood and Charlie Huff. And so it was just so much fun to make my old baseball card collection come to life, really.
Let's begin with a Hall of Famer, Steve Carlton, and writing about his slider. What made him so special?
Well, to me, he was my favorite player of all time. He was a big reason I got interested in baseball in the first place, just being 7 years old, living outside Philadelphia for his last Cy Young season. And that pitch just captivated me, the way it just sliced diagonally across the plate and humbled so many great hitters. And Carlton was also, a mysterious kind of guy. He didn't talk much, didn't really talk at all for 15 years with the Phillies. But I was able to, track him down over the phone through some people I know. And he was wonderful. We talked for a long time about the slider and about really how he turned to it in desperation on a trip to Japan with the Cardinals. early in his career, and the Cardinals had just won the World Series been to the World Series, and they thought, yeah, we'll just go over to Japan and have some fun. These guys will just treat it like an exhibition. But the Japanese players were into it, and Sadahara Oh hit a home run or two off of them, and he's like, well, I got to break something out to try to you know, take this seriously here. So he threw a pitch right at Sadahara Oh's ribs, and it broke right over the plate. And he went flying back, and he's like, "Whoa, this could be something. This slider I've been wanting to try for a long time. This might be a real weapon." And then he went on to the Hall of Fame.
And I mean, the great thing what got him in the Hall of Fame. I mean, it's one thing to have the weapon; it's another thing to know how to replicate it, to keep doing it.
Exactly right. And so many, you know, a great pitch is only a great pitch, first of all, if you know how to repeat it many, many times and back it up with other pitches and locate it. You know, that was one thing when I went and had lunch with Mike Mussina up at his hometown in Montoursville, Pennsylvania. He sort of sniffed at all these modern metrics about, you know, spin rate and everything. And what he meant was, you know, he understands what spin rate is, but he's like, it doesn't tell you if it's a good pitch or not. You still have to be able to locate it and know how to use it.
And it seems in reading the book that at some point there's a very early point where they the pitcher knows if it's going to be good or not.
Right. Yeah, you get a pretty good feel when you're a pitcher of what works and what doesn't. But a lot of it's just being able to stick with something. You know, I think about Frank Viola, who was the World Series MVP for the Twins in '87 and had a nice career. And, you know, he talks about when Johnny Padres, the great Brooklyn Dodgers hero from 1955, taught him as a pitching coach how to throw the changeup. You know, Viola couldn't do it. It took him a long time. He was throwing it right into the ground. It's a weird pitch to get used to, because you take your dominant finger off the top of the ball. It's really on the side, and you're supposed to, you know, sell it with the same arm speed as a fastball. And that's tough for a lot of guys. Some guys never master it. Clayton Kershaw cannot throw a changeup for all of his greatness, but Viola stuck with it, and, you know, he became a star. And at this point, you know, he was already, you know, he'd already made it to the pros, already made it to the majors, but was just looking for something to separate him, to take him from ordinary to extraordinary. And, you know, once he stuck with it, he found something that worked.
I mean, you talk about Johnny Padres in the book, and then he shakes off catcher Roy Campanella in Game 7 of the 1955 World Series, and he insists on throwing the changeup, and that's the final out.
Right. Yep. Yeah, that was fun. And I also just like the poetry of the fact that those two are actually, you know, they have statues of them 60 feet, 6 inches apart, Campanella and Johnny Padres, right outside the Hall of Fame Museum, which is kind of cool. And just, you know, I try to get into some of those moments that that we remember in baseball history, just to talk about what, you know, the thinking behind them, you know, because we know these things happen. We know these guys had these stats. But there's no stat sheet that says this is what the guy threw. You know, this is how he produced these stats, or how these memorable moments happen. So to be able to talk to, you know, someone like Ralph Terry, who was on the mound and gave up Bill Mazeroski's home run to lose the series in 1960, but then 2 years later won the series for the Yankees by getting out Willie McCovey on a line drive to second. To be able to talk to him about what he was thinking in those moments, why he chose the pitches he did, and where those pitches came from, how they originated, with not just him, but a lot of guys. That was a real treat for me.
The other thing fascinating in the book, and just back to Johnny Padres for a moment, and that is, so he has a pupil by the name of Guy Conti. He teaches the changeup to Pedro Martinez. Pedro Martinez uses that in the Boston Red Sox win of the World Series in 2004. Those connections are fascinating.
Yes, and that was one of the things I really tried to convey in the book, and I'm really glad you recognize that, because that's so much of what baseball is, right? I mean, you know, one of the reasons I love baseball is not just what I see every day, and that's certainly really exciting, but the passing down of traditions, and the fact that it is a national pastime, I think that's really cool. I think it's cool to be able to tangibly connect the Red Sox breaking their curse to the Brooklyn Dodgers finally winning their first one with a little stopover and the Minnesota Twins winning their first in between. And it's all really from Johnny Padres passing on the pitch to Frank Viola. And then, as you say, you know, teaching Guy Conte, who teaches Pedro Martinez, who inspires lots of kids in the Dominican to throw changeups and elsewhere. So, you know, it just keeps going on. And that was a really, really neat aspect of all this.
The other thing that is fascinating, which I found also to be a neat aspect, is how much the pitchers want to learn from each other. You have a great story in here about Roy Halladay and what he wanted to learn from Mariano Rivera. I mean, just Roy Halladay is great in and of himself and yet still wants to do something else.
Right, and the setting for that meeting was the All-Star game. So, I mean, Halladay, you know, was already a great pitcher, but he had a feeling that he was doing something wrong when he threw his cutter, and that there was something in his hand place, his finger placement, that he just wanted to unlock to make that cutter better. And Rivera, you know, taught him, you know, where to place his thumb on the ball, and that made so much difference for Halladay. It really took him to the Hall of Fame, because those next 3 years, one with Toronto and two with Philadelphia, he threw more cutters than he ever had, more cutters than any starting pitcher in baseball in those seasons. And it was that final career, that final burst of excellence that put Halladay over the line and into Cooperstown. Because without, you know, you really need about 10 dominant years to get there, I think. And he didn't quite have that. He didn't have any more than 10, but he sure had 10 amazing seasons. And it was Rivera's tip that, you know, that he took and ran with and, you know, became, you know, that had that final flourish that we all remember.
I would just like to geek out and ask you a question as we wrap up our conversation. As a kid, I was a Phillies fan. I grew up in Philadelphia, right outside of Philadelphia, in nice. Montgomery County. And oh, cool. Very neat. We're outside.
I lived in Flowertown until I was 12, and then Gwinnett Valley after that.
Excellent.
Where were you?
I'm in Center Square and Ambler.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I went to Germantown Academy.
So, I went to Wissahickon. Right.
There you go.
Yeah,
cool.
There you go.
All right. I used to play on Wissahickon's baseball field. Robin Roberts Jr. was my coach.
So that's really cool. So now, okay, so Steve Carlton is the guy, right? So I went, every game I went to, I just watch him play. And, of course, you know, seeing the games and the great Harry Callis, you know, telling you what that guy was doing on the mound. But, you mentioned this fact that he's very quiet. And is that part of the success, do you think, that just the complete focus and the ability to being able to shut out everything else?
Yeah, I think so. And I didn't get into that part so much. I mean, you know, I could write a whole book about Carlton.
Yeah.
But I remember when I, you know, I'd love to. But when I went, I remember one time getting a behind the scenes tour of the Vet. And he wasn't pitching for them anymore, but it was recent enough. This is like late 80s. And they showed me a room off the side of the clubhouse that was just like this concentration room that Carlton would go in and sit there and listen to peaceful noises and watch sort of like peaceful images on a screen or something and just get himself completely locked in to the moment. And I remember, you know, like you probably, I remember when he would pitch at Shea Stadium, he'd have cotton balls in his ears. So, he wouldn't hear the planes overhead. And he had an incredible focus. And I think, you know, the not talking to the media thing, he had that amazing year in 72 and then a rough year in 73 and, you know, had some clashes with the Philly media. And he just said, you know what, I'm just going to block out all the noise. And to his credit, I mean, it's ironic, I guess, that I became a sports writer and that he didn't talk to sports writers all those years. but to his credit, he didn't, you know, it wasn't like, I'm not going to talk to you, but I will talk to you. He didn't play favorites. He didn't even talk to, you know, Harry Callis for post-game interviews or Richie Ashburn's pre-game show, right? He just, you know, he said it was a blanket policy and he stuck with it. And obviously it worked for him.
And those two men had tremendous respect for him. I mean, it wasn't anything. They understood it. They got it. Or at least they said they did.
You know, policy is policy. And that it wouldn't have been fair to everybody to only talk to a few. So in a way you respect that. It was nice though, too. I mean, you know, he's a private guy. He doesn't like to do much media, but to be able to, you know, get him on the phone for 45 minutes or so and talk to your childhood hero, it was a real kick.
Yeah, it doesn't get better than that. The book is just a lot of fun, so fascinating, and I learned so much. It is K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. It's published by Doubleday. Tyler Koeppner, thank you very much for your great work in this book and, of course, your work with The Times, and I appreciate you being here this morning.
Yeah, thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much. Again, Tyler Koeppner is the author of K, A History of Baseball in 10 Pitches. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.